All right. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Martin, all who have business before this court, draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable. Please be seated.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today by Judge Meredith on my right and Judge Laura on my left, and we're here today for the matter of Eddie Reynolds versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 244130. Just a note before we begin here that the court was notified a few weeks ago that, unfortunately, Mr. Reynolds passed away. A motion to substitute has been filed, and the court extends sincere sympathy to the veteran survivors. And we will now move ahead with argument. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record.
Thank you, Your Honor. John Niles, and with me is Sarah Garber, both from Carpenter Chartered. We initially represented Eddie Reynolds in this appeal. We now represent the movant for substitution, Mrs. Wendy Reynolds.
Thank you, Mr. Niles, and welcome, Ms. Garber.
Nicholas Dunnard on behalf of the Secretary, joined by Nicole Cottle.
Thank you, Mr. Dunnard and Ms. Cottle. As you know, each party has 30 minutes to present argument, and Mr. Niles, how much would you like to reserve? 5 minutes.
5 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay. That will happen, and you may go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. The purpose of 38 CFR Section 3156C is to make veterans whole from precisely the kind of administrative error that happened here, where VA denied a benefit without first having associated with the claims file all of the official relevant service department records. The way in which 38 CFR Section 3156C3 accomplishes that purpose is by requiring VA to assign an effective date as early as the initially denied claims filing when, as is important to this appeal, VA's award of the benefit is on, at least partly on the basis of the later acquired service department records. The principal issue that I intend to address today is why the board erred under 38 CFR Section 3156C when it denied an effective date for Mr. Reynolds' service connection of PTSD effective earlier than September 25th, 1996. This appeal also presents two other issues, one of which is earlier entitlement to TDIU, and the other of which is service connection for impaired glucose tolerance. Mrs. Reynolds stands by the briefing of both of those issues, and that briefing addresses why the earlier entitlement to TDIU is inextricably intertwined with the earlier PTSD entitlement. And the board erred in denying service connection for impaired glucose because it conflated the requirement of a current disability with instead a requirement of looking only at the diagnosed condition of diabetes.
Well, Mr. Niles, let me just stop you since you just said that we can rely on your briefs for the diabetes or impaired glucose tolerance and TDIU issues. But moving to the effective date for the PTSD. So let's start at the beginning. Part of your argument was saying that 3.114 wouldn't apply because this is a reconsidered decision and 3.114 refers to original and reopened, or at least the older version did, and claims for increase. So was 3.156C1 applied here? And so my question really is, was this reconsidered? Was his original claim reconsidered under C1?
You know, I believe it was reconsidered under C1, and we can see that in part by looking at the joint motion for partial remand that sets the context in 2023 within which the board issued its decision that is now on appeal, where then the issue became, okay, we have this reconsideration. We are then looking at the board favorably finds even under C3.
So what can you just identify what decision of the VA you believe accomplished C1? I'm not sure if you're talking – you seem to be talking about the decision on appeal, the 2023 board decision. Is that
– I am, and the reason I'm looking there is when Mr. Reynolds had appealed from the prior board decision, the 2021 board decision, part of the reason why was that he felt that there's an inadequate reasons or bases provided as to C1. The parties agreed then in the joint motion for partial remand that the board needed to address 3156C in greater detail, and also agreed about when looking at the what the VA had done with the service department records that had come into the claims file in 1997 and 2009, and so when the board. I'm going to start with a different perspective. If the board had not reached C3 in 2023, there would have been no reason for it to look at on what basis in 2012 the board had granted service connection. That's a C3 question, not a C1 question. And so we know that to have gotten there, the board is going into reconsideration, even if it could have been more explicit on that. We know that at least analytically the framework is of C3. And so
I would just like make an aside here, and that is that we have quite a few cases, probably I think they might all be non-presidential, but possibly one presidential, where VA just skips C1 and goes right to C3, and that's basically been considered an error. But just as I said, that's an aside here.
And I would ask the court. So these proceedings have been going on since 1974, and certainly, when I'm saying that the board could have been more express in things, it is out of a concern for now Mrs. Reynolds that we want closure on this. And the board did reach the C3 issue, and it did so under the instructions of a JMPR, an order granting the JMPR that required it to move to the C3 analysis. And so that is where I would ask this court again, is did the board err under C3 analysis in failing to assign the earliest effective date provided by that regulation and instead confining the effective date within the 3114A analysis? And it did err. And we know that because the evidence of record does everything that it needed to do to get that better relief. The board is under a duty to maximize the legally permissible award of benefits. We know that under many cases and the regulation 3.103A. And among those cases, even this court's decision last month in the Charles Reynolds case. And you have here throughout time before 1996, Mr. Reynolds had initially filed in March 20th, 1974. Error proceedings, another additional several files in the 1980s, and repeated requests from VA for corroboration of in-service stressors. When Mr. Reynolds throughout time had been providing lay testimony, lay statements, his own statements of what had happened to him during service. And it was not until the 1997 entry of service department records establishing the units to which he had been assigned. And in 2009, what was then JSRRC memorandum that then in 2012, the Board of Veterans Appeals is looking at page 6473 of the record as saying, hey, this is helping to corroborate the in-service stressors. The VA then is granting service connection for the PTSD. And then in 2023, now the board is favorably finding that those same service department records are providing at least part of the reason for the basis for that grant of service connection for PTSD. And so you just that should be that.
So but, could I
please
jump in there? As you know, under 38 U.S.C. 5110G, if an award of benefits is made pursuant to a liberalizing regulation in this case, then the effective date for that award of benefits can't be earlier than the effective date of that liberalizing regulation. And I know you just talked about the 2012 board decision that eventually awarded service connection here. And it said in that board decision that it found under the recently amended 3.304F, F3, that the appellant's lay submissions were credible supporting evidence of fear of hostile military activity, and that because a VA physician had said that that, or psychiatrist had said that his fear of that fear led to his PTSD, that service connection was warranted. So my question is, why wouldn't that award of benefits in 2012 have been made pursuant to that liberalizing regulation that the board explicitly relied on?
Your Honor, I would view the question as whether the liberalizing law was one basis sufficing for service connection versus was the only basis on which service connection could be granted.
So in that regard, could the appellant have ever established service connection without the help of that new regulation that lowered the evidentiary threshold for corroborating a stressor?
Yes, Your Honor. And the 2023 board found in Mrs. Reynolds' position that it did. And this is where at page 6473 of the record, the 2012 board is addressing, while his actual participation in any cargo handling operations in Vietnam has not been confirmed, information from the JSRRC corroborates that veterans assigned battalion participated in those operations.
It didn't necessarily corroborate his particular stressors, what he was suggesting that he had been fired upon while delivering cargo.
Well, the board in the very same paragraph of the, and this is the 2012 board, in the very same paragraph of its decision goes on to cite this court's decision in Pentecost versus Principi for the proposition admonishing against taking too narrow a reading of the corroboration requirement. And the 2023 board then, in what is a factual finding, record at page 6 says that the board's 2012 grant of service connection for PTSD was based in part on the new
part.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. Okay. So I guess you're disagreeing that he needed more than his lay statements to that he, prior to 2010, was there any evidence other than his lay statements that discussed the specific in-service stressors that were the eventual award for benefits?
Not that VA had accepted as sufficient to corroborate the in-service stressors. It was not until the military personnel records entered in 1997 and then the JSRRC memorandum that relied on those that came in 2009 that VA was able to concede that requirement of service connection.
So let me address this a different way. So assuming we view that the award was pursuant to the new regulation, that the appellant's lay statements alone, even with some information from the service department suggesting where he was at the time that he was on the cargo ship, if that wasn't enough, he needed the lower evidentiary threshold. Would 5110G preclude an effective date earlier than the 2010 regulation?
Your Honor, I'd like to push back on part of the premise of that question. I heard you ask, Your Honor, if we were to decide.
If the court were to decide that the original grant of benefits was pursuant to the liberalizing regulation, would 5110G include an earlier effective date?
Well, and the reason I'm pushing back, Your Honor, is that that is a determination for the board to make in the first instance. It's a factual determination. And so if the board had decided that these newly acquired service department records had played no part in the grant, then we wouldn't be here today. But the board did the opposite. The board said that the 2012 records, the 1997 and 2009 records, the official service department records, did play part of the basis of VA's grant of service connection in 2012. And because of that factual finding, at least before this court, we know that 3156C has to apply. It has to apply because now we have two regulations in play, 3156C, which is remedial in nature, seeking to make veterans whole, and 3114A, the effective date regulation for liberalizing laws, which, again, the purpose of which is to help veterans. And yet we have a denial, a restriction of benefits when those two at least come into the same neighborhood, and that is just plain wrong.
Let me ask one more way, and then I'll let my colleague jump in. If the statute precluded an effective date earlier than the 2010 regulation effective date, could the regulation undermine that prohibition, the regulation you're talking about, 3.156C?
No, Your Honor, statute controls over regulation. And so if 38 U.S.C. Section 5110G did unambiguously prevent going back before the liberalizing law effective date when there is another basis, already existing basis, for granting service connection earlier, then the statute would, in that circumstance, under that interpretation, prevail. However, that is not the case here. 5110G1 does not prohibit assigning an earlier effective date when there is this already stronger basis for the veteran for granting service connection. Again, the whole purpose here for and the intent with which Congress has suffused the entire claim system is to help the veterans. And this is one manifestation of that, where 3156C, I'll stick with the statute, where 5110G, Congress did not preclude other bases from coming in. It's only if the grant is on the basis of that liberalizing law, and then within VA's duty to maximize benefits, is the only basis service connect can be granted is that liberalizing law. Would that then be the circumstance?
Mr. Nalzo, Judge Meredith was expressing skepticism that he could have won service connection based on the new records in light of his entire record back in 2012 without considering, let's assume that 3.304F3 had never been passed, and in 2012 the board made a decision about service connection. Are you saying that with the evidence then, the new service department records and all of the old stuff that was there, you're saying that he would have won?
I am saying that. That is Mrs. Reynolds's principal position, that the service records suffice to grant service connection. Now, if the court is not willing to follow that, then what I would submit is that the 2023 board statement of reasons or bases unfortunately remains inadequate. And as much as we don't want yet another reasons or bases remand, that's the situation that we would find ourselves in for the board to address that in the first instance. That particular question, not just was the liberalizing law a reason for granting service connection, which the 2023 board did and when it's on at some length about, but very particularly was that the only way that service connection could have been granted, because if the service department records were enough to grant service connection back in 2012, then that was enough for 3156C3 to apply and to open up the earlier effective date. And we speak in terms of earlier effective date, but that is in the context of, again, these claim proceedings have been going on since 1974.
Mr. Niles, the appellant's argument evolved a little bit between the opening brief and the reply brief, and as I understood it, basically, the appellant was conceding that if the only reason were the liberalizing law or regulation in this case was what was relied on, then essentially conceding that you couldn't go back further than the effective date. But that's not what your argument is. But that evolved between the opening brief and the reply brief.
I believe what Your Honor may be referring to, I was going back through the briefs, of course, in preparation for this argument. There was a statement right at the end of the statement of the facts that I believe did read to that effect. We do on the next page, the summary of the argument in the initial brief, describing how there's this difference between what did happen versus what is the only thing that could have happened.
Right? Okay, but hypothetically, if that was the only reason why service connection was granted, would you agree that this is not the argument you're making, but if that were the only reason why it was granted, are you stating that, yes, that would be the effective date, the date that the regulation went, the changed regulation went into effect?
No, Your Honor, I do apologize for the imprecise briefing there at the end of the statement of the facts. The question is not just historically what did happen, But with the duty to maximize benefits, the board does have de novo review, and so it must, as part of its de novo review, look at and see, starting with the roots of the strongest relief possible, 3156C3, can I provide an effective date? Can I assign an effective date as early as here, March 20th, 1974, the earliest date of filing? And if not going through time, then at some point, it would reach right, September 25th, 1996, after having said no, 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 no. And at that point, you get to how its application under the 3114A framework.
Okay, so in the board decision on appeal here, the board found that the requirements for the application of 3.156C applied to Mr. Reynolds' case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Do you believe that VA has provided full reconsideration of appellant's claim at any point in the long procedural history of this case? And if so, where?
So Mrs. Reynolds' principal position is that the 2023 board decision did so. But what it did is it made an error of law. After having favorably found that 3156C3, that these service records were at least part of the basis of the grant in 2020 and 2012, at that point the board had to assign the earlier effective date that was available under 3156C3, but it didn't. It jumped from there to the framework of the more restrictive, liberalizing law effective date framework, which was error, and it was error under the doctrine that has to maximize the legally permissible award of benefits. And at page 17 of the slip opinion in the Charles Reynolds case from last month, there's a paragraph discussing how we can't just rely on historically what happened. It opens up too much to mistake or mischief. And so it's, again, the board, that's our principal position, right? And then in the alternative, if the court is not prepared to go that far on the facts before it, then at the very least, she would request that if this court can not find enough in terms of the board having provided that reconsideration, that at the very least, it vacate and remand for the board to do so in the first instance.
And if that were the case, what specific guidance would the court, in your opinion, need to give to the board?
It would be helpful. The guidance that would be helpful for the board would make very explicit. I think that this is a question that still remains open. After I've mentioned the Charles Reynolds case a couple times, we did not submit it under 30B a week before this argument because the way I thought this argument would go, we did not think it would be pertinent and significant. However, what the Charles Reynolds case did is discuss when an official service department record plays at least part of the basis for an award. We see this case as being the next question conceptually downstream. Okay, we know that there's a service department record that plays at least part of the basis for the award. What does that mean? And what would be helpful for the board is a very clear statement following up on there's helpful language from Emerson versus McDonald, 28 Fed App 200 at Penn Site 210. That discusses the purposes of these different regulations, 3156C and 3114A, and what that means here in the context of the duty to maximize a legally permissible award of benefits, is that when 3156C3 permits the assignment of an earlier effective date than 3114A would permit, it is the earlier effective date under 3156C3 that must be assigned.
Just want to follow up one more time on your point about whether the initial award of benefits was pursuant to the liberalizing law. And you suggested that the board hadn't made that finding, but if you look at record at 19, the board in the decision on appeal said that the board's grant in 2012 of service connection for PTSD was based on the recently amended 38 CFR 3.304F. And then in the next paragraph, while he considered the subsequently added personnel records, the award was based on the relaxed regulation found in 3.304 304F3.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's the legal error that the board made. So the board at record page 6 said the board's 2012 grant of service connection for PTSD was based in part on the newly acquired service personnel records. The board at page 17 of the RBA said that based on the board's September 2012 citation to the newly added service personnel records, the 2023 now board concludes that there is no question that it relied at least in part on such records to effectuate its grant of service connection.
And they explain on page 19 that some of those records helped to corroborate that a veteran did participate in cargo handling operations in Vietnam.
That's exactly right.
And under 3.304F, at any time during the pendency of this, is that enough to corroborate his stressor, which I think was being fired upon?
The 2012 board said that it was, or at least that's what the 2023 board found. And there is a basis.
2023 board found that it was based on the lower evidentiary threshold.
So
3.304F3.
I understand there to be two levels of analysis that the 2023 board performed. One was, did the 2012 board rely at least in part on the service personnel records? Yes, it did. Number two, the 2023 board then asked, okay, I'm going to see, so ultimately, what was the basis on which the 2012 board granted service connection? And that second question is one that, as a matter of law, is the wrong question, because it jumps trains. It gets to going in the wrong direction, right? Where it's not, if the 2023 board had said, the 2012 board could not have relied solely on these service personnel records or based its award in any part on these service personnel records, which would have brought this case closer to the Flores-Vazquez case, right, where there is a finding against newly acquired service personnel records having play any part in the grant. That would be an adverse factual finding, and that would be very, very different. But here, instead, the 2023 board is finding in Mr. Reynolds' favor that the 2012 board at least relied in part on those records, and as a result, 3156C3 applies and requires that earlier effective date. I see that I've exceeded my time, Your Honors.
You can continue.
And so that, in one sense, was the board's error, the 2023 board's error, that after it had found favorably that the newly acquired service personnel records formed at least part of the basis of that award, and that factual finding is binding on this court, but if the court wanted to dig deeper into it, it can look again at record at page 6473 and see, and it, as Your Honor noted, at record at page 19, the 2023 board is stating that the 2012 board looked at the information from the JSRRC as corroborating what happened, the in-service stressor. That corroboration is exactly what was needed, and also is exactly what the relaxed 3.304F3 under the amendment in 2010 said was no longer required. So the very act then of looking at this service personnel records, the later acquired service department records for corroboration, means that we are outside the box of the 2010 amendments to 3.304F3.
Okay, Mr. Niles, I have two questions. So what was the second? You said that the 2023 decision, which you're looking at instead of the 2012, it had the first step right in that it acknowledged that the new records played a part in the grant. And then what did you say that the second question should have been, where the board went wrong?
Well, where the board went wrong essentially is making that second question. Once the board had decided, it favorably found that the newly acquired service personnel records form part of the basis for the grant of service connection, that's when 3156C3 is triggered, and that should have been the end of the story, the end of the analysis. Grant under 3156C3.
Yeah, what part of 3.156C?
C3 and C4, right, where now you're going back to the earliest effective date possible.
Right, but 3 has three different bases for arriving at an effective date? I just want to be clear on what you're...
Yes, Your Honor. So 3156C3, saying an award made based all or in part on the records identified by paragraph C1 of this section. And so here, Mrs. Reynolds's position is that that's the...
Is effective... You just want to continue? Is effective on the date entitlement arose or the date VA received the previously decided claim?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or whichever is later. And then there's a provision that doesn't seem to apply here, but you can correct me if... I'm wrong. So which of those three?
In the provision for complete list, it is or such other date as may be authorized by the provisions of this part applicable to the previously decided claim. And so then the date that Mrs. Reynolds is seeking is effective on the date entitlement arose or the date VA received the previously decided claim, whichever is later. And her position is her principal position is that was March 20th, 1974, the date of the first filing, when evidence establishes that if you look backwards in time, Mr. Reynolds already had these mental health symptoms.
So you're going with number two, did you say?
That is how
not the date entitlement arose, but the date of the previously decided claim.
Mrs. Reynolds' principal position is yes, the date of first filing, and then by that time there's already enough evidence in the record. However, in the alternative, at the very least, no later than April 29th, 1985. Is when the record had all of the evidence that could have possibly needed to say that Mr. Reynolds' PTSD had manifested as such, even not looking at other mental health conditions characterized as PTSD or subsumed within that.
Okay.
Service connection.
And the fact that he already has service connection prior, an effective date of service connection prior to a date that is allowed by 3.114, does that play any part of your argument?
We have not made it part of the argument. The reason we did not make it part of the argument is that the 2012 grant was, and a lot of the proceedings since have what we're relying on were not under the AMA, where we believe the law is squirrelier in terms of what is a favorable finding that it's conclusive effect, right? If this were an AMA grant, no question, that finding would be binding but for clear and unmistakable error on all future adjudicators. Mrs. Reynolds is not abandoning that position in term, but what I'm saying that I, after having acknowledged what the way we have briefed this before this court, is if we get there, it's very likely on remand to the board. That's what was our thinking on that.
Got it.
Nothing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Miles.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Court should affirm the Board's decision, which denied an earlier effective date for the Veterans Award of PTSD and TDIU benefits for three reasons. First, where the sole basis of entitlement in a reconsidered claim is pursuant to a later enacted liberalizing law, and regardless of the role that any new service records play in that award, Regulatory Section 3.156C3, in conjunction with Section 3.114A, cannot offer an effective date earlier than the date of the liberalizing law's enactment. Second, the veteran only became entitled to service connection for his PTSD on account of the July 2010 amendment to Regulatory Section 3.304F3, which reduced the evidentiary burden to substantiate a claim for PTSD and created a new legal basis of entitlement to the award. And third, given that the veteran's entitlement to his award only arose due to the change in the law, if C3 were construed to permit an effective date earlier than that is currently in place, the veteran would be placed in a position better than he would have been had those records been a part of the record during his claim's initial adjudications. In September 1996, the veteran submitted new and material evidence to reopen previously decided claims for a psychiatric condition. Several months after the claim was reopened, VA associated relevant service department records with his claim that had not previously been before the agency. This triggered VA's duty under regulatory section 3.156C1 to reconsider the previously decided claims in light of those records.
And what is the date of the, because I wanted to start where I started with Mr. Niles. What decision did the reconsidering hear?
Certainly, Your Honor. Secretary believes that reconsideration occurred at the time that VA adjudicated the veterans' reopened PTSD and psychiatric claims in initial and appellate decisions, which would be the 2005 supplemental statement of the case, followed by the January 2006 board decision, which denied entitlement to service connection for PTSD and a non-PTSD acquired psychiatric condition, as well as the February 2010 board decision, which again denied service connection for PTSD. The Federal Circuit and this court have made clear that reconsideration under C1 requires VA to reconsider the veteran's claim and issue a decision on the merits in view of those records that were not previously part of the claim. VA did so here when it denied service connection for PTSD in consideration of the records which showed Mr. Reynolds' duty assignments during his service in Vietnam.
I'm sorry, can you give me one date? Or you talked about sure. 2005, 2006, and then you talked about 2010.
Sure. Reconsideration, the procedural rights that a veteran is entitled to under 3.156C1 can be satisfied by VA when it issues a decision on the merits of their previously decided claim and it considers the records at issue. Here, the claim has been on appeal since it was first filed in 1996, and there's been several initial and appellate decisions that were issued that denied the claim on the merits in full view of the records that Mr. Reynolds were not previously a part of his claims file. It denied service connection for PTSD in board decisions in 2006 and 2010, but then only after VA amended regulatory section 3.304F3 in July 2010 and following a memorandum decision from this court, the board granted service connection for PTSD based in part on those records, but only because they served an evidentiary role that was only possible pursuant to the liberalizing law that went into effect in July 2010. Specifically, these records could help substantiate that the veteran's circumstances, places, and types of his service were consistent with his claimed in-service stressor, and there was not clear and convincing evidence to the contrary that VA could provide that would rebut that presumption. That presumption only came into effect following the July 2010 amendment, before a veteran had to submit credible supporting evidence that their claimed in-service stressors actually occurred. That's what the board decided in its 2006 and 2010 decisions, that credible supporting evidence confirming the occurrence of this claim stressors had not been submitted, and his claims were denied on that basis. So it was only following the July 2010 amendment, regulatory section 3.304F3, that the records at issue in this case could serve a role in the award of service connection.
And those decisions that you are referring to, the 2006 and the 2010, in the Secretary's view, they serve to place this language from Blue Baugh, serve to place the veteran in the position he would have been had VA considered the records before the disposition of his earlier claim.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Satisfied all of those. And did that include like a duty to assist consideration?
The duty to assist, regardless of whether a claim is reopened and considered under 3.156A or based on new service records under 3.156C, the duty to assist applies to the claim in the same way that it would in any other claim. And here, there is evidence that VA attempted to verify the veteran's stressors by requesting further information that could help corroborate them during the course of this appeal, but no information was received that could help corroborate the stressors. And thus, the evidence was still not sufficient to establish that the claimed in-service stressors actually occurred under the pre-amendment version of the regulation. Because the board in September 2012 granted service connection in part based on these new service department records. As I mentioned, because they served an evidentiary role that was not possible prior to July 2010. So in the board's decision on appeal in 2023, parties agreed that it should consider whether an effective date under 3.156C3 was permissible, as the award was made based on service records which were not previously available. 3.156C3 provides that the effective date shall be the later of the date that entitlement arose or VA received the previously decided claims. Here, the later of those dates is the date entitlement arose, which was July 2010, when VA amended the regulatory section 3.304F3 and created the basis of entitlement that the Veterans Award was based on. In Ortiz, the Federal Circuit made clear that this amendment in July 2010 was a liberalizing provision because it made a substantive change in the law and created a new basis of entitlement that was not previously possible.
Mr. Dunner, let me just ask you the same question that I asked Mr. Niles. So the fact that the RO, after the board decision in 2012 that granted service connection, the RO, I think in 2013, granted a September 1996 effective date, which apparently was does that have any it seems like it's contrary to 3.114 in some respects. And so does that have any impact on did the secretary concede that it wasn't going to apply 3.114, or what can we glean from that? And does it have any impact on your argument?
Certainly, Your Honor. Approaching the second question first, the secretary's position is that it did not waive the applicability of Section 3.114A when the RO assigned the effective date. It's currently in place in April 2013. This is because VA's policy view at the time that the RO assigned the effective date was that the July 2010 amendment to 3.304F3 was not a liberalizing provision which would require the assignment of an effective date pursuant to 5110, statutory section 5110G, implemented through 3.114A. So at the time, and as this court noted in its decision in Foreman, VA's policy view, which it presented in the Federal Register at the time of the amendment, was that it was not a liberalizing provision. So VA assigned the effective date pursuant to statutory section 5110A, the date of the receipt of the claim, which was September 1996. Regarding the first question as to whether this potential discrepancy in an effective date has any bearing on the argument before the court today, it's possible, Your Honors. In regards to Collins Counsel's argument that the board failed to determine whether the 2010 amendment was the sole basis of entitlement to a award of service connection. The fact that the veteran has already is already in receipt of an effective date that is the earliest possible he could receive for his claim, absent the applicability of a finality exception such as 3.156C, he has not been harmed by the application of the liberalizing law provision to his claim. He's already in receipt of the maximum benefits he could receive for his claim had it been adjudicated, had it been adjudicated today, he would be restricted to an effective date based on the Federal Circuit's decision in Ortiz. However, he is currently in receipt of an effective date based on the date of his claim, so he has not suffered any prejudice in that regard. And the only way that he can receive an effective date earlier than that is currently in place is through the operation of a provision such as 3.156C3. However, the proceedings in this appeal since 1996 make clear that an effective date earlier than that in place is not possible because he was not awarded service connection during the initial reconsiderations under the pre-amendment versions of the PTSD regulation because his stressors had not been confirmed. These records at issue when the veterans' previous claims were denied in 1976 and 1983, they were denied on the basis of a lack of an in-service event or treatment for the claimed conditions. The records at issue in this case do not speak to that issue in any way per the Federal Circuit's decision in Kaiser, because these records only provided further information about the veteran's unit assignments, the specific companies that he served with in Vietnam. But those facts were not in dispute during the time of the earlier claims. His DD-214 form, which was part of the record initially, showed that he served as a boatswain and noted that he had it had the overseas bar, which showed that he did have service in Vietnam. And he had testified to those facts during his previous proceedings, noting that he believed his claimed conditions were incurred due to his service in Vietnam. Notably, the board, the RO, nor the board during those earlier proceedings doubted Mr. Reynolds' credibility. They never rejected his testimony that he served in Vietnam and that he believed his claimed psychiatric condition was caused by the experiences in his claimed stressors. However, the veteran's lay testimony is not sufficient evidence, absent credible supporting evidence that the claimed stressors occurred prior to the 2010 amendment.
Well, it seems like he was in a bit of a box, I guess as many veterans are, because they were adjudicating PTSD, when really he had claimed back when he first claimed, and probably throughout until the 2000s, I think. He had claimed a mental disorder, and then he got a diagnosis of MDD, schizophrenia. Then they just called it acquired psychiatric condition. And then when he got a PTSD diagnosis, then he was stuck in this rut, so to speak, of having to show a stressor. Now, for the other conditions that he had also been diagnosed with that really held sway over a lot of the VA decisions for the first, let's say, 20 years of his or even maybe 30 years of his attempt at getting benefits, would he have benefited from them, considering, as well as service connection for PTSD, a more general acquired psychiatric condition claim? Did he have anything back then in service that would have shown that something happened in service so he could have achieved service connection without having to have proved a stressor?
No, Your Honor. To the point Your Honor was just making regarding whether there was any in-service evidence of psychiatric condition, that was the basis of the RO and the board's denials during the 1970s and 1980s claim. And these records at issue in this appeal, the new service records, do not add any substantive information on that point. They only show the specific units that he served with. And that information is relevant in the newer PTSD regulations, which required evidence of a stressor up until 2010. But the veteran's claim was reconsidered for a non-PTSD psychiatric condition as well during the current claim. The board, in those earlier decisions I mentioned, 2006, 2010 board decisions, they denied service connection for both PTSD as well as an acquired psychiatric condition, which would require the same evidence, same legal elements to be satisfied, as would be required during the earlier 1976, 1983 denial. Because VA determined that those legal elements had still not been satisfied, even in view of these new service department records which came in, it's clear the veteran's claim was reconsidered under C1, but an award was not made, which shows that the records at issue would not have placed him in a different position had they been part of his claims file originally, as the clear purpose of the regulation requires.
And just to clarify, a clarification for you to make here, the 2006 and 2010 decisions that you're talking about, did they mention 3.156C?
No, Your Honor. 3.156C was not mentioned at the time of those decisions. However, the Federal Circuit, in a case called Morse, made clear that reconsideration, the procedural requirements under C1, can be satisfied by a decision on the merits that considers the records, even without explicit mention of the regulation. And this court in Reynolds, in its decision last month, came to largely the same conclusion, where it viewed the evidence of record, it viewed the way that VA had handled the records at issue, how it treated them, the evidence it developed through those records, to determine that the award at issue in that case was based on those records. So,
but VA here didn't do any further development, which you just indicated had happened in some of those other cases.
VA did attempt to develop the veteran's claim for PTSD based on confirmed stressors. There were several requests for information to provide further, more specific information that VA could use per its policies to attempt to verify the veteran's claimed in-service stressors. But there was no response received to these requests. And because the duty to assist is not a one-way street, VA adjudicated the claims based on the evidence of record, which still continued to show the veteran's claimed in-service stressors had not been corroborated. Given that the veteran's entitled...
I have a very specific question, and I realize that you were not on the Secretary's response brief, so I'm happy to walk you through it, but it's the section of the brief that starts on page 19 where it's discussing the appellant's argument about the board failing to address the basis on which the AOJ awarded the September 1996 effective date. So I'll give you a minute to get to it, but specifically I want to draw your attention to page 20 of the brief. It starts on line 4, and it says, so, comma, arguably, entitlement never arose at any point prior to July 2010 for an award of service connection for PTSD. I find that at best confusing. The word arguably suggests that this remains an open question. Does this mean that the Secretary agrees with the appellant? In this case, that the board decision didn't fully explain whether entitlement could have arisen before the regulation here with the liberalizing regulation 3.304F came into effect?
Your Honor, the board did not make an explicit finding that the only basis of service connection in this case was pursuant to the liberalizing law. The Secretary notes that. However, two points reinforce the board's decision to forego making that explicit finding. First, the plain language of the regulation 3.156C3 provides that an award made pursuant to or made based in part on the records identified under C1, and in Emerson, the court explained that the reference to an award made is based on the specific award that has been made by the RO. And this is important because when we're looking at it, we're conducting a C3 analysis here, we're looking at how these records would have changed the earlier proceeding and thus how they eventually did contribute to the award that was made. So it's important to understand how these records actually played a role in the development of evidence and in the eventual grant of service connection. So the focus should be on the award that was actually made. And here the award, as the board explained, was made pursuant to the liberalizing law. The second reason, the board's decision can be read to have implicitly found that the sole basis of entitlement was the liberalizing law. The board discussed all of the prior proceedings, the previously decided final claims, as well as the earlier decisions in the claim on appeal, and explained that they were still denying service connection because an in-service stressor had not been substantially corroborated. In essence, the board explained that the records at issue did not cure any of those deficiencies in the prior decisions, and the veteran's only basis of entitlement was pursuant to the liberalizing law. So the Secretary does note that the board did not explicitly conclude that the only basis of entitlement was the liberalizing law, but the proceedings in this case since 1996 and the board's discussion of such can be read to have made an implicit finding that the only basis was the liberalizing law.
In the board decision on appeal, Didn't the board find essentially that appellant's case satisfied every prerequisite for 3.156C? In other words, it went through, it found that the appellant made the initial claim in 1974. It found that VA didn't have appellant's complete service records at that time. And the last one found that it relied in part on newly associated service records when the board granted service connection for PTSD in its 2013 decision. That's meeting the prerequisites, is it not, for 3.156C?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. The only additional point I would add to that is that there's a requirement that the records, the newly associated service department records, be relevant to the prior, to the previously decided claim. As the Federal Circuit explained in Kaiser, that requires that the information that the records provide go to the basis of the prior denials, not just that they tend to prove or help substantiate a fact that may be in dispute. So the only point that the Secretary would note is that the board may not have fully addressed the relevancy of these records as they relate to the previously decided claims. The board explained that the records were certainly relevant for the eventual award of service connection, as they tended to help substantiate the requirements under the amended regulation, the places, circumstances, and types of veteran service. But the Secretary would just note that there might be a question regarding the relevancy of these records as to the initial prior decisions.
So in that case, the Secretary's position is that the board wasn't relying strictly on the liberalization in the relevant regulation? I mean, I'm having understanding how those two square.
Sure, Your Honor. The parties agreed in the JMR that the board should reconsider whether an effective date pursuant to 3.156C3 was warranted because an award was made based on new and relevant service department records. So as appellant's counsel noted, the board, pursuant to the party's agreement in the JMR, may have gone straight to the C3 analysis, but the secretary does not concede that the board erred in any way in its analysis under C3. And whether reconsideration occurred under C1 is a favorable factual finding that the court cannot overturn but for clear error, as the court explained in its decision in Reynolds last month. Here, it's clear that reconsideration occurred in this case throughout all periods and under both the pre-amendment and the post-amendment theory of service connection that the veteran was eventually awarded. So reconsideration did occur here, Your Honors, and an award was made, which triggered C3's effective date.
And again, when was that that you believe that VA provided a full reconsideration of the appellant's claim during the procedural history?
The final point at which reconsideration occurred, which the Secretary notes that reconsideration can occur at various points, but the final point that it occurred was when the board awarded service connection in September 2012. At that point, the analysis would shift into a C3 analysis because an award has been made and there's no longer a focus on service connection specifically. It turns into the downstream elements of the effective date.
So I just want to just get a clarification given your answer to Judge Lahr. You had told me that the reconsideration occurred in January of 2006 and in a 2010 decision, both of which were denials, excuse me, of service connection. But you just said to Judge Lahr that it fully occurred, or I forget your language, in the 2012 board decision.
Reconsideration requires when these new service, sorry, Your Honor, with such a long procedural history, it can be a little bit tricky, but with such, when reconsideration must occur, VA has to issue a decision on the merits of the previously decided claim in view of those records. You know, it issued decisions, both initial and appellate decisions, on the merits with explicit consideration of these records. The board in these earlier decisions mentioned and discussed the substantive content of the records, the transportation companies he was assigned to. That satisfies, under the Federal Circuit's interpretation, the C1 procedural requirements. But because the claim had been appealed and again remanded and returned to the board, it was required to again issue a decision in view of those records. So this reconsideration occurred in this case, but it occurred at different times due to the procedural nature and the appeals that have led to this case today.
2006, 2010, and 2012 was the PAC, was the...
For the board decisions, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Dunnard.
For foregoing reasons, the court should uphold the purpose of Section 3.156C and maintain its narrow exception to the bar of finality, which governs all VA claims. Thank you.
Mr. Niles, we will like to hear your rebuttal now.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Laura asked me what type of decision would be helpful for the board. And I'm concerned about the confusion about when the C1 reconsideration occurred. Now, the claim proceedings have been continuously pursued since at least 1996. And pinpointing the date here, or the need to pinpoint the date here, I believe that that would provide help to the board and certainly litigants in terms of we now know that we're past C1. We need to be looking at C3. My friend noted that the 2023 board did not explicitly find that the liberalizing law was the only basis for granting service connection. That does stand in contrast to what the board did explicitly find at record page 17, which is that there is no question that the 2012 board relied at least in part on such records, the later required service personnel records, to effectuate its grant of service connection. To find otherwise would be subverting the board's favorable factual finding to this court's own first instance factual finding, which is not permitted. In terms of, my friend also was discussing whether the newly acquired service personnel records went toward an unestablished claim element. Record page 9905, May 24th, 1985, VA is instructing Mr. Reynolds to submit new and material evidence tending to show that the claim disability was incurred or aggravated in military service or by military service. Record pages 9888 through 9891, May 9th, 1994, rating decision denying service connection for what then was described as a nervous condition, VA still having not determined that it possessed sufficient corroboration of in-service stressors. Record page 9867, September 1996, VA issuing a letter inviting Mr. Reynolds to submit new and material evidence showing that these conditions were incurred in or aggravated by active duty service. Only later then did these service personnel records come into the record, and only after they were into the record did the 2012 board grant service connection, even citing them as corroborating in-service stressors. And so providing what VA before the 2010 amendments to 3.304F was needing. These are records that, as the 2023 board favorably found, did form part of the basis for the grant of service connection, do trigger 3156C3 reconsideration earlier effective date entitlement, and the board, including the contrary, prejudicially erred. Mrs. Reynolds would request that as far as the court can go in at least reversing in part the denial of an earlier effective date than September 25th, 1996 for effective date for PTSD, the court do so. Even if the court cannot go earlier than April 29th, 1985, anything the court could do to narrow the scope of issues that remain open would be appreciated. But she does request, of course, any relief that this court can provide, including, at a minimum, vacater and remand of the board's denial of an effective date earlier than September 25th, 1996 for the PTSD, inextricably intertwined with that, an effective date earlier than September 25th, 1996 for TDIU, and then for the reasons briefed, also to vacate and remand with respect to service connection for the impaired glucose tolerance.
Thank you, Mr. Niles.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for your arguments, counsel. And the case is submitted for consideration, and we will come down and greet counsel.
All right.